They had lain in wait for Oscar, and taken him down, and disposed of his car, all within 30 short minutes, which was an excellent performance. Oscar was tough and wary, always thinking, not easy to beat. A good wingman. A good friend, too, now crying out for vengeance. Machmaney's man could sense his presence, very strongly, like he was still close by. All of which made him feel alone and adrift in hostile territory, and very much on the defensive. All of which were unusual feelings for him, and all of which therefore made him a little afraid. And all of which made him change his plan. He had sudden new priorities. The giant stranger could wait. His primary targets were now Rossi's boys. Machmaney's man started right there at the motel. He had seen someone earlier, lurking behind a window, watching. A man with strange hair. A local. Possibly the motel owner. At least he would know which way Rossi's boys had gone. Roberto Cassano and Angelo Mancini were parked 4 miles north, with their lights off and their engine running. Cassano was on the phone with Rossi. Nearly 2 o'clock in the morning, but there were important matters to discuss. Cassano asked, "You and Seth Duncan made this deal, right?" Rossi said, "It was my initial contact back in the day. It turned into a family affair pretty soon after that. It seems like nothing much happens up there without unanimous consent. But as far as you know, it's still your deal?" "As opposed to what?" "As opposed to someone else's deal." "Of course it's still my deal," Rossi said. "No question about that. It always was my deal, and it always will be my deal. Why are you even asking? What the hell is going on?" "Seth Duncan lent his car to Machmaney's guy, that's what." Silence on the line. Cassano said, "There was a Cadillac at the Marriott when we got down there this afternoon. Too old for a rental. Later, we saw Machmaney's guy using it. At first we thought he stole it. But no. The locals up here say it's Seth Duncan's personal ride. Therefore, Seth Duncan must have provided him with it. He must have driven it down there and left it ready for him. And then after the initial contact we made, Machmaney's guy seemed to start operating solo. At first, we thought Safir's boys had taken out his partner, or maybe the guy just ran out, but now we think he must have come straight up here in their rental. He's probably hanging out with the Duncans right now. Maybe they both are, like best friends forever. We're getting royally screwed here, boss. We're getting squeezed out." "Can't be happening." "Boss, your contact lent his car to your rival. They're in bed together. How else do you want to interpret it?" "I can't get close to the ultimate buyer." "You're gonna have to try." More silence on the line. Then Rossi said, "Okay. I guess nothing is impossible. So go ahead and deal with Machmaney's boys. Do that first. Make it like they were never born. Then show Seth Duncan the error of his ways. Find some way to get his attention. Through his wife, maybe. And then move in on the 3 old guys. Tell them if they step out of line again, we'll take over the whole thing, all the way up to Vancouver. An hour from now, I want them pissing in their pants. What about Reacher? Find him and cut his head off and put it in a box. Show the Duncans we can do anything we want. Show them we can reach out and touch anyone, anywhere, anytime. Make sure they understand they could be next." Reacher woke up for the second time and knew instantly it was 2 in the morning. The clock in his head had started up again, and he knew instantly he was in the basement of a house. Not an unfinished swimming pool, not an underground bunker. The concrete was smooth and strong because Nebraska was tornado country, and either zoning laws or construction standards or insurance requirements, or just a conscientious architect, had demanded an adequate shelter, which made it the basement of the doctor's house, almost certainly, partly because not enough time had elapsed for a move to another location, and partly because the doctor's house was the only house Reacher had seen that was new enough to be both designed by an architect and be subject to laws and standards and requirements. In the old days, people just built things themselves and crossed their fingers and hoped for the best. Therefore, the pipes of various diameters were for water and the sewer and heating. The green metal boxes with the mineral stains were the furnace and the water heater. There was an electrical panel, presumably full of circuit breakers. The stairs came down, and the door at the top would open outward into the hallway, not inward. No one let doors open inward at the top of a staircase. Careless residents would go tumbling down like a slapstick movie. And tornadoes could blow at 300 miles an hour. Better that a shelter door be pressed more firmly shut, not blown wide open. Reacher sat up. Evidently, he had come to rest in the angle of wall and floor with his head bent. His neck was a little sore, which he took to be a very good sign. It meant the pain from his nose was relegated to background noise. He raised his hand and checked. His nose was still very tender, and there were open cuts on it and big pillowy swellings, but the chip of bone was back in the right place. Basically. Almost. More or less. Not pretty, presumably, but then he hadn't been pretty to start with. He spat in his palm and tried to wipe dried blood off his mouth and his chin. Then he got to his feet. There was nothing stored in the basement, no crowded shelves, no piles of dusty boxes, no workbench, no pegboards full of tools. Reacher figured all that stuff was in the garage. It had to be somewhere. Every household had stuff like that. But the basement was a tornado shelter, pure and simple. Nothing else. Not even a rec room. There was no battered sofa, no last-generation TV, no old refrigerator, no pool table, no hidden bottles of bourbon. There was nothing down there at all, except the house's essential mechanical systems. The furnace was running hard, and it was making noise. It was a little too loud to hear anything else over, so Reacher crept up the stairs and put his ear to the door. He heard voices, low and indistinct, first one and then another in a fixed and regular rhythm, call and response, a man and a woman. Seth Duncan, he thought, asking questions, and either Dorothy Coe or the doctor's wife answering them with short syllables and no sibilance. Negative answers. No real stress, no pain or panic. Just resignation.